All right, we are live for the Monday edition of the Morning Check-In. As always, scrambling on the back end, trying to put everything together for this live stream this morning. Hope everyone is doing well and looking forward to connecting and sharing with you some things that caught my attention for the most part over the last, I guess, 72 hours, give or take, and trying to make sense of everything and just put it out there, let you guys chew on it and do what you do with it. And let me make sure everything is flowing smoothly on my end here, and then we can get into it, man. Of course, I'm going the long way today just because I want to share an interesting graph just to show how over the last decade plus, the magnitude of the monetary maneuvers that have been done to prop up this banking structure. And on top of all the most recent interviews that really paint a very unpleasant picture over the banking system, I want to share that with you as well as just scan through the headlines and see what's happening this morning. And let me check in real quick, make sure everything is flowing smoothly. Let me know if you guys can hear me. And we got the Vutran checking in, Aces checking in. We got Rick checking in, LBP, Mr. Ed checking in. All right, fair amount of people here, man. Appreciate you. As always, don't mean to run so far behind timing-wise, but once again, I always come across juicy things and I want to share last minute. So let's make sure everything is running smoothly, man. It's going to be a good day as always. Let me, as always, you know, the format, we'll get into some good news coming from our devotional this morning and get into some of the headlines and keep it moving and go. And if we can, get in some Q&A at the very end. But all righty. For those who might be new to the community, you never know who might be new. I want to encourage you to make sure you guys subscribe to RTD, whether it's on YouTube or on Rumble. Make sure you let me know in the comments section where you guys checking in from, and I try to reply as best I can to make sure everybody plug in with real time. And also, for those who enjoy being able to connect in the morning and want to be a blessing to the channel and would like to support the channel, there's a link down below for you guys to be able to do that if you so desire. So I want to make sure I make that available for everybody. All right, let's get into some good news this morning, and then we'll jump into some headlines. Off rip, let's get it going. Let me move some things around here so I can make sense of everything so you guys can see what I see. It says, be patient, May 13th. It says, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. That's from Hebrews 10:23, NIV version. And then it goes on to say, do not run ahead of God's promises. Be patient. Expect him to show you his path and provision. If you've waited a long time to see the desire of your heart come to fruition, this may be an exceedingly difficult. It was for Abraham and Sarah, and after hoping for a child for so many years, Sarah's faith failed, and she decided to take matters into her own hands. She offered her maidservant Hagar to Abraham as a surrogate, but it was a colossal mistake that had unimaginably destructive consequences. You can see the Middle East, how descendants of Hagar's son Ishmael and Sarah's son Isaac continue to fight to this very day. Hence, the whole situation we're experiencing at this current moment. Do not make this same mistake. Don't run ahead of the Lord's timing. Patience is a fruit of the Holy Spirit, restraining you and allowing you to persevere until the Father fulfills his good purposes for you. He will help you endure if you turn to him. Yes, it is difficult, but absolutely worthwhile. So wait for him and enjoy the fullness of his blessings. And the closing prayer is, Lord, it's so difficult to wait. Strengthen me with your spirit and keep me focused on you. And so there you have it. The good news from the devotional this morning, man. Hopefully that good word there charges you up a little bit and hopefully rings home for some who might be in need of that word this morning. Okay. Yeah, man, let's keep it moving, man. What we got this morning? Let's get into it. Let me move some things around on my screen here. Got too many tabs open. Let me do this here. And for those who are plugged in, man, if you haven't, make sure you hit that thumbs up button, show your support for the channel. Any support, any magnitude helps. All right, let's get into it. Before I move forward, I want to make sure I announce and give an opportunity for those who might be new to the community. You never know. And so just doing my typical introductory type of things here. But for those who are interested and you have not, I would encourage you to take the Dollar IQ quiz. 10 simple questions make a world of difference. Just basically expose your knowledge gaps and things that you were not taught in school deliberately in reference to money and monetary policy in general. So if you're interested, links in the description, rethinkingadollar.com/quiz. Test your IQ and see where you stand, and then go through the process to what I consider the three steps to monetary savviness, and you will be more than just fine. All right, next here. I want to make sure I remind people, for those who are interested, man, let me get my screen on here. I got the wrong page up here. But for those who have not, I want to encourage you to take a chance and find out more information utilizing a Colonials Metals Group, their self-directed IRA. So beneath this video here is a form where you can just fill out this quick form here, submit it, and you'll be contacted by one of their experts there in reference to giving you all the information you need to take out a self-directed IRA where you can hold gold and silver as well as a lot of other items within that vehicle there as a way of protecting and preserving yourself. So the link's in the description for those who are interested, colonialsmetalsgroup.com/RTD, or you can give them a call at 1-8-521-2448 and speak with somebody to get more information as to see if or not this is something good for you. So feel free to check them out if you guys would like to. All right, let's make it happen, man. I want to start off, so just, you know, just some typical things, you know, like I didn't really get a chance to dive into and just check out the metals game, but we'll look at some metals numbers real quick, and then we'll get into the primary headlines I want to talk about, and it has everything to do with the banking sector. So as we can see here, let me refresh my screen, just look at the metals action real quick. So as of now, we got gold. It's at $2,342, down $18 as of right now. Silver is $2,830. It is up 7 cents. Then we got platinum at 1,017. We got palladium at 1,006 ish, give or take. So yeah, a little action there. And then let's check into the crypto space, see what we got going on here. Looks like as of right now, Bitcoin and Ethereum are doing pretty well. Shouldn't be of a surprise to anybody. Let me get myself out of the way here. So this is what we're looking at right now. Over the last hour, Bitcoin is up $63,000 and climbing, supposedly. Okay. Let's look at the S&P 500 real quick here. It looks like, let me refresh this page here. It looks like Microsoft is not off to a good start this morning. NVIDIA is down a little bit. Apple is doing its thing, waiting on OpenAI and their collaboration. And then, of course, we got the banks. What's happening with the banks this morning? The banks appear to be in the green. That's a good thing. Financial services, not too bad. Insurances is up. So that's what we're being told. That's what we're visualizing as of now. But the greater story is something I want to talk about. Of course, the Federal Reserve, just another little headline here, Fed to cut rates in September, says nearly two-thirds of economists. Okay, cutting wouldn't necessarily be a good thing. But then again, that's the narrative they want to feed us. But I want to zoom out a little bit. So here's a visual aid I came across that just really shows the amount of monetary maneuvering that has been done over the last decade plus, and how the most recent maneuvering in reference to the 2023, March 2023 banking fiasco that took place. And just looking at this visual aid here, I had a lot of thoughts that I wanted to kind of just share if I can remember them all. But if we were to zoom back and go back to the GFC, so just go back to the GFC and just look at how small this little blimp was. And so here is a total of all the methods, vehicles, primary credit, secondary credit, seasonal credit, the PPP liquidity. So these are all newer ones, but the amount of vehicles they create to try to prop this thing up. And what really stood out to me was just the size of this previous blip from back in 08, 09 in comparison to what we see right now today. And so this is the March implosion that took place. And of course, over the last year, they've been able to try to calm some things down. And so things are trending downward. But based upon where we have been and where this thing is going, so from the great GFC, where it was just a small blip in comparison to what happened in March. And then, of course, we got the lockdown, you know, the slow to spread and the results that came from that, with the market activity and the things that came about from here. Which is looks like the PPP is the purple, and of course the blue is the primary credit, you know, emergency windows that were extended to the banking sector. And then of course we had this most recent and last couple of year, we got other credit lines, the BTFP and all that stuff like that. We talked about that before, but what came to mind for me was, if the banking sector is literally just starting to be exposed. More people are finding out about it. We have more people speaking out against it. I'm going to share with you a little video clip that took place from Thursday, but I didn't get a chance to talk about it, so I'll share my two cents on it, where, you know, when you have a billionaire talking about the probability of, you know, banks failing often, just makes you just realize that what we're witnessing here on this screen will be another blip on the radar. So if this 2008 was systemic in nature and the economy damn near collapsed, and we know the results of that, and look at how small this is compared to what we've witnessed over the last year in its magnitude. So imagine whatever that next systemic event, when it hits, whether it's a too big to fail bank or just a rapid succession of small regional banks that just go one by one by one, week by week, day by day, whatever, or however that folds out. Imagine how much greater this chart will look to the point where this current event that's underway right now, this is what's going on right now as we speak. Imagine how small this might look to the magnitude. So say if I had, I couldn't really draw, but if I had a graph to just draw, you know, started, you know, 2008, then we got 2023. And then just imagine like how off the charts this next banking event could be in reference to the amount of emergency stimulus that will need to be injected. And then we get into whatever comes after that. And so my point in bringing this up is just how crazy things are right now, to where literally we're in uncharted territory and we haven't really seen anything yet in reference to what could possibly come. And this then leads into let me get into it. So this is what I wanted to touch on. And this is from last week, so some people may have seen it, some people may have not, but, and I'm going to actually play a little clip in a moment, but a billionaire, let me just zoom in here, real estate investor Barry Sternlicht says he expects at least one bank failure per week due to the real estate loans. That's a fragile animal right now. And so just when you have a person of his magnitude who's made his money off of real estate come out basically concerned with how problematic this current debt scheme is and how it's going to impact real estate, and commercial real estate in particular is going to be the ones that probably lead the way, that right there should be even more concern, more cause for concern, given the scope of what we just witnessed from that graph of being a small blip in 08 to what happened in March and still going on right now, to where we can literally see something completely off the charts. And let me just real quick here share with you a little segment of his little spiel, just to paint an overarching picture of what he was talking about when he made that statement.
I do think rates will come down. I think they'll come down for two key reasons. Like, Powell looks like he's looking for a reason to bring them down. And he has to be aware that we have a $34 trillion deficit, and he can pay 4% on that or 5%. And just on the debt rolling this year, the delta is over $130 billion. The difference is 1 point, which the U.S. government is going to have on a flywheel of. So he's aware of that. And the second thing is the regional banking system, you know, with $1.9 trillion of real estate loans. That's a fragile animal right now. And one way to get capital into those banks is to lower rates. So it basically makes the assets worth more. And I think also the whole real estate complex, we're sort of an accidental, unintended consequence of his. He was trying to lower inflation, food, energy, which arguably, is he going to, in fact, oil imports with interest rates?
Or home insurance rates.
Or home insurance rates. Or food supplies from Ukraine, which jack up wheat prices. And he's working with a very different economy, where since he started raising rates in May of 22, the healthcare, government education industries have added 3 million jobs. So he's not impacting that at all. And that's almost 50 million of 160 million jobs. So he's got a hard task with a blunt tool. And the consequences are the real estate markets are taking it on the chin because rates rose so fast. We could have handled this, but we couldn't handle it this fast. And people are looking for these cracks, and you're going to see the cracks develop now. you're going to see a regional bank fail every day, and not every week, maybe two a week.
Maybe two a week. So the cracks are already showing. You're going to see a regional bank fail once a week, maybe two times a week. And so based upon his guess, estimate, expertise, whatever you want to call it, when a billionaire speaks about what could come in reference to these cracks, that's definitely something that I think deserves more attention, because if he's willing to go out on record with making claims like that, you know, like, beyond this being a great news or soundbite, just think about the magnitude of what will come from that. And so clearly, him being a billionaire, he's not necessarily immune from it, but it's good to say that he's won't be directly impacted the way everybody else will be, because a lot of his wealth, I'm assuming, is not in actual cash. It's probably in the properties. So he's probably piggybacking on the fact, or banking on the fact, that there'll be a major correction. But then again, for him, that's going to be a great buying opportunity, because it's good to say he had a lot of cash socked away, and he's going to benefit off of this banking contagion the way I'm sure he did probably in the GFC timeframe. But once again, a banking failure once or twice a week is very concerning. And it doesn't just end there. So here is some more information here from another excerpt of his, but talking about multifamily is in the crosshairs. And so literally, not only will commercial real estate be a major problem, but multifamily real estate will also be impacted. So this is an interesting article here. I'm not going to go through all of it here, but it's going to come down. It's going to trickle down into Main Street. And so it's going to be a problem. And one thing he talked about in this article here is how, because of the stress on the regional banks, like, they're literally looking for people to take this bad debt, aka these properties, off their hands. And they're not getting many bidders. And so here he says, we've gotten calls about how can you help? How can you take over banks' assets? They're trying to arrange recaps before they fail. So literally, the banking sector is trying to scramble to get people to come in and help prop up this housing bubble by taking on some of these non-performing loans. And a lot of people aren't buying, because why would you buy now when you know things are going to get cheaper? From their standpoint there. So just a little something worthwhile there. And so I'm, you know, let me see, keep it moving. I'm not going in no particular order. But here's another, let me get myself together. Here's another little interesting narrative about real estate in reference to how it will impact the banks. Fort Worth's tallest building sells for $12.3 million at auction in a stunning price drop. And so here you have the building right here. It says Burnett Plaza, the tallest building in Fort Worth, has been purchased via foreclosure auction for $12.3 million just 3 years after it was sold for $137.5 million. That is a, do the math on that. That is what, 85%, 90%. That's over 10%. That's a heck of a haircut. So literally, that's above, beyond 90%. That's a 90%+ haircut. So somebody literally is losing out on that. Who is it? It's the regional bank. So you have, this is just one story out of dozens that I've come across and shared before, of banks that are literally taking losses of this magnitude, 90%-ish plus, on a regular basis. How can the banks not come crumbling down? So these are things that's very concerning. And it doesn't help that this is just happening in the U.S. here, or not just happening in the U.S. here. Here's some more information here about Canada and their recent governor coming out talking about the systemic nature of basically assets being overvalued in Canada, referring to their housing market. And so real quick, let me just play for you a soundbite that plays into this article here.
At the same time, the valuations of some financial assets appear to have become stretched. This could increase the risk of a sharp correction that could generate system-wide stress. The recent rise in the use of leverage in non-bank financial institutions could amplify the effects of such a correction.
Could amplify. So what he's talking about here is, it's all in this article right here. And the reason I'm talking about this is just because these are some stories that, outside of hearing about it once or twice, the illusion of the current equities market will just make people dismiss the fact that under the surface, the banks are going to be the trigger that leads to that next systemic event. And what's happening in Canada, of course, there's more stuff I can talk about, but that 66% capital gains tax is going into effect as of June 25th, to where anybody who makes above $250,000, capital gains tax will increase for you as well as certain businesses. And is it a coincidence that Biden is also floating out increasing capital gains as well? Not at all. All right, so real quick here, just thumb through it, just because I think these are some interesting stories we're talking about. It says the bank, let me make sure I'm getting myself out of the way here. It says the Bank of Canada, a financial system, is stable, okay, but risks remain due to debt servicing costs among households and businesses and stretched valuations of financial assets. Stretch. How do you get stretched valuations? Literally mean artificial, like bubble-ish type, you know, valuations due to monetary policy. The central bank releases financial stability report on Thursday, which evaluates the risk and stability of Canadian financial system. It says over the past year, households, businesses, and banks and other financial institutions have taken proactive steps to adjust to higher interest rates and to weather economic shocks. And so it goes on to say non-banking sector. It says so far, the central bank highlights that stretched asset valuations is a risk to the financial system. So literally, they're trying to spin off a more positive outlook in the narrative of stretched asset valuations is a risk to the financial system. So literally, having inflated their housing bubble to an all-time high, as well as raising interest rates, which has had such a burdensome impact on their population there, the ability to keep that housing bubble inflated is becoming problematic. And so they just call it as a stretched asset. And so it says among non-bar participants, such as pension funds and hedge funds, have significantly increased their leverage by 30% over the past 12 months. So literally, due to higher burden costs, more banks are now reaching out in the form of debt by leveraging their current assets to the point where it is a concern as well, because they're trying to return yield to pension funds as well as to other investments, to where they've taken on more risk to the point where it's becoming noticeable. So they have to prepare the public for the fact that things are not as sturdy as they should be. So there will be an event coming soon. And so let me just share with you a couple more things here caught my attention. Then I'll get into some Main Street activity. Household debt. The report indicates that non-mortgage holders are experiencing the most amount of financial distress. The financial stress appears to impact renters the most. And so there's some visual aids here. And then it says Canadian businesses. Here's insolvencies increased sharply among businesses between 2022 and 2023. As of March this year, businesses insolvencies surpassed the average from before the pandemic. So this is what it looks like on a graph. Like literally, this was the average of businesses going bankrupt. And now we've had a sudden surge over the last year, which you can't deny that. You can't, it's hard to deny that. Let me get my window back up here. Forgive me. All right. And so another thing here, just painting a realistic picture of what's happening in the real world, not what we're being sold on TV. And so here, the share of mortgages in arrears has risen more for small and medium-sized banks than for large banks. So here is a good picture of the banks in Canada. And so we can see that there was a major blow, of course, back in the GFC that impacted Canada as well. And so here we are now. The yellow banks are the smaller banks, and the amount of losses that they're taking have surged a lot higher than the large banks, which are the blue. So literally, people behind in their mortgages, was it two or more months, have impacted the smaller banks more than have the larger banks. And that is not by coincidence. And so with that, what is all that about? I start off, for those who might came in late, just basically painting a picture as to how the current banking contagion we're experiencing, when you look at it on this visual aid here, is so small compared to what will come. If the GFC was right over here, and it literally was just a speck on this graph, and this is what's currently going on right now. This is what we're witnessing right now. The maneuvering to try to keep this banking system propped up. Imagine if and when something breaks, how all of these will look small in comparison to what will be off the charts. And so A lot of people are not even paying attention to this, unfortunately. And that's the part that bothers me, because at the center of all this happens to be our currency. And what is the solution that they want to roll out to the world? They're talking about it all the time. And so that happens to be the rebranding of our currency, because the banking sector is the catalyst for what will lead to the Great Reset being completed sometime between now and the end of this decade, where the banking sector will look completely different. Our concept of banking will change, as well as just the overall investing model. Like, literally, if they're going to have a banking event, that means the S&P, which is for the most part used as the health gauge of our financial sector, there will be a major sell-off there, and there will be no recovery in former fashion. And then that will lead to the rebranding of the financial sector in general, when it comes to tokenizing assets and everybody's future promises of compensation will also be tokenized, and everything between, to where, you know, literally before this decade is out, we will live in an entirely new world where it would not resemble anything of what we're experiencing today. And to me, that's like, okay, how could that be even possible? That's how crazy things could get in the future, to where it's just stuff that's continually worth talking about, because if it's not talked about from alternative media, who's going to talk about it? Because you won't hear about it from the mainstream media. All right, keeping it going here. Let's get into some mainstream stories real quick. Another event that could be a trigger, and this will also impact the speculation space, i.e. the crypto area, because the banks won't be the only catalyst that will lead to a systemic shock. It's definitely going to take place in the crypto space as well. And then, so this is in reference to Tether. Tether has been it's kind of like the Federal Reserve's back arm, or Federal Reserve's under the table slush fund mechanism to allow this particular entity to create dollar derivatives to then inflate the crypto market, i.e. the way Bitcoin has risen. And a lot of the activity that's taking place in the crypto space is not real dollar activity. It's this stable coin, synthetic dollar manipulation that the Federal Reserve they've allowed it up until this point. And the question I would put out there is, why are they pivoting now? Like, why is it such an extensive crackdown on this space? Because that should be definitely cause for concern for people who are basing their entire financial thesis upon Bitcoin, which I have a problem with, because once again, it's all a psyop designed to distract and to divert people's attention off of the primary issues of what's taking place now. And so this is another interesting story that will definitely probably hit the crypto market hard. It said, it's clear the U.S. government is going after Tether, says Ripple CEO. So this comes from Garlinghouse as of this past week, from a little podcast interview he did. But he gave some interesting quotes here, because the SEC has been trying to drag down Ripple forever to no avail. And so he's sharing his opinion on the fact that he knows or thinks or hears word that Tether will be next. And so if Tether has been used by the financial authorities from the Wall Street Department to use as a way of inflating the crypto market, why are they going after it now? So literally, this is about to be a great shakeup or shake out in reference to the crypto space. It's going to be a major drawdown, major sellout, major selling. But then again, it's going to be a good opportunity for the banks and Wall Street to buy in. So literally, they're trying to weed out the chaff and literally just inflate the banking sector, because this sector is going to be used amongst the banks for sure. They want them to be the primary custodians and the exits and entry points for the space. And that's why all this crackdown is happening, in my opinion. But real quick, it says, Garlinghouse said on a Monday, May 10th episode of World Class Podcast, there would 100% be another crypto-related black swan, like the collapse and subsequent uncovering of fraud perpetrated by FTX executives. Says the U.S. government is going after Tether. That is clear to me, he said, without elaborating, and stopping short of suggesting any possible U.S. action against Tether would be the next black swan. He instead called it an interesting one to watch. And so, for whatever reason, him being on the inside, mind you, he's a part of the World Economic Forum's private-public partnership program. And so if he's out here floating the idea that Tether is up next, it's 100% certain that they're going to be under scrutiny and the regulators will come down hard on them, the impact of that could be a black swan, is what he's saying. And so we're talking about a banking event, a equities event, a real estate event, a crypto event. And all along, I would assume that there will be a gold and silver event, naturally. Will it be short-lived? Will it be long and drawn out? I don't know. But out of all those categories, the banking sector, which has bankers' deposits, as well as all the products, you know, mutual funds and, you know, CDs and all those things that they spun out product-wise, things that are not tangible, things that are not real, things you can't hold directly. They exist on somebody else's ledger. So that's a major counterparty risk. Then you have stock market. You know, there's more than enough people talking about the magnitude of a correction, 60, 70, 80% correction. Once again, derivatives on a ledger, not physical for the most part. Nobody has, you know, stock certificates saying they really own anything. And so if you don't hold it, you don't own it. So that's, you know, the second non-fungible asset that people consider a part of their wealth. And then third, you got the real estate. Real estate is tangible, it's real, but it's not liquid. You can't get out of housing like that. So technically, there could be a major drawdown in the housing sector and millions of people, you know, literally underwater like that, to where it becomes a liability at that point, to where there's a major offloading of real estate, to where it creates a domino event of just a cratering house price. So even though it's fungible, it's not liquid. So therefore, it's not something that can really benefit you in that moment. As far as preserving your wealth, it'll be the reinflating of the housing bubble that would allow people to feel the effects of the value of houses going back up, which for the baby boomer generation, it could be too late, because for those who own real estate as a asset class that produces income, if people aren't paying rents, it's not an income, then more than likely, if you got a mortgage on it, you're going to lose it. So it's going to be a great housing unraveling. So that's the third aspect of a potential liability. And then you got the crypto space, which is it's only $1 trillion. So that's pennies in a bucket compared to, you know, a $30 trillion bond market, $300 trillion, you know, total global asset allocation. So crypto is going to sell off majorly, 80%, just as much as S&P would. And what are we left with? Real world commodities, AKA gold and silver and everything else in between. And so literally gold and silver, platinum, palladium, those monetary instruments that people can actually hold in their hands, they will definitely dip in USD terms. But because they have always served as an escape valve or escape hatch of safety, the fiat price could potentially go down substantially. But then again, we've already witnessing the decoupling of the price of metals based upon the spot price in Asia compared to the fake paper price here. There's going to be a much greater divergence in price, to the point where we won't be able to actually determine what a price of an ounce of gold or silver will actually be at that moment, because nations have already raced to it. China has literally positioned themselves to lead the way when it comes to revaluing an ounce of gold and silver or whatever in another currency term, I believe. So out of the four things I listed that are non-fungible or not readily liquid asset classes that will completely abolish people's net worth, gold and silver will probably surface faster and rise so high that it'll send us a shock throughout the investing community, because people who have not been purchasers or shifting over some of their wealth into that old archaic barbarous relic that we, you know, everybody don't love because it don't produce anything, it doesn't have any yield, the valuation of that metal will be something like we could never imagine possibly. And that's why everything I talked about today leading up to the banking events, the people who are speaking out of systemic events, the banking events, all that stuff lives on a ledger somewhere. All the stuff that lives on a ledger somewhere is all subject to systemic counterparty risk, where the only people who will probably be able to somewhat weather the storm are people who have minimum exposure to all that contagion of stuff I talked about and who have something outside the system in their possession that allows them to weather the storm and rebuild faster. Yeah. Lord Hybrid, appreciate you, man. It says the government is stealing all the innovation from crypto, then stepping and stopping them and using the tech to enslave us. Appreciate the love, Arfie, man. You are 100% right. And to me, it is quite obvious that that has been the case from day one. But then again, why is it so hard for people in the crypto space to see that? And so I've shared on my Twitter account. Let me share with you something here. I'll bring it up here. I shared something yesterday in reference to a statement that was made by someone who is, I would consider to be very knowledgeable in this space. And it's all predicated on a disclaimer that to me is more than enough worth the time, energy, and effort to investigate. Because if you do not fully, with a non-biased approach, consider the damage that can be done to people who are not willing and wanting to address the problematic nature of investing in solely digital tokens and coins and ledgers that have not been tested, that literally are vulnerable. They're vulnerable because they are software. To me, that is a dangerous approach to have, where people don't seem to think that's the case, to bet upon computer code at a time where everything is already going digital and they want things to go digital. And so I'm going to share with you real quick what I'm referring to, because I put out videos just to challenge narratives. And I can tell it really hits home, because people don't respond to it, because the only way you can really respond to it is by literally considering and then addressing the statements made. And so here is this video I'm going to share with you real quick. And then I want to get your thoughts on it, because to me, this is something that you can't not take serious. Listen to this. This is from Jeff Booth, because I follow and listen to a good portion of what they say, trying to pick holes in things. Listen.
I think the most profound thing about this whole space is, as more and more people journey down this rabbit hole, the emergent aspect of who we are on top of a base layer of honesty changes us.
On top of the base layer of honesty, this protocol, what does that mean?
You get flushed out. And we've grown up, all of our history books, everything that we've ever lived in is from a different paradigm. So it would be really easy to think that that was the paradigm that the world is moving into, because it always has looked like that. The paradigm we're moving into with Bitcoin, as long as it stays decentralized and secure, is unlike the world's ever seen. So that would be confusing for people to think it's a coin or Ponzi scheme, or measuring it from their piece of paper that they think it's debasing, so they think it's going up in price. So it'd be really confusing for all of these reasons. So I just don't assign malice to it. I don't assign anything to it. It just is. And as you get deeper into it, you just let people be who they are.
And as you get deeper into it, you let people be who they are. But he said all of that. And what stood out to me, and what I put in a tweet, and I'm just rambling a little bit here, but I want to share with you what I put out there in a tweet, because this is something that people, you should consider this. You have to consider this. You have to put this as a disclaimer when you're talking about a new asset class. And then, you have to put I never see people mention no guarantee to future performance and subject to losing everything. Like, that has to be listed everywhere you put this type of subject matter, because there's nothing there. You know what I'm saying? It's on a ledger that literally the ledger in and of itself is a risk, because it's all dependent upon the proof of work concept, which is miners continuously running all the time. And that's just one counterparty risk. Then you have the actual idea that the encryption algorithm, the hash rate algorithm in and of itself, was created by the NSA. And it's like, would you not think that the NSA created the actual algorithm that is being used to support a version one of a protocol, that they release something into the atmosphere that could be used against them, and them not have an encryption breaker, a piece of software that could tweak or alter, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're just stuff like, come on now. Anyway, but this is what I put. It sounds risky to go down the rabbit hole so far that you let software alter you to the point where you base your entire paradigm and worldview on it, especially with the caveat, as long as it stays decentralized and secure. In a world where things are always changing. And so, like, I've watched Jeff Booth amongst a lot of other people. So in my opinion, I'm ranting a little bit, but Jeff Booth and Michael Saylor are the most articulate, you know, like, scientific minded individuals that have good arguments. And they say the same thing over and over again, in a sense, but just find new ways to make it look appealing to the people who are they're selling this concept to. And Jeff Booth always talks about if it stays decentralized and secure. So just those two things there, to me, just are enough to just really consider the fact that it's only been 15 years with Bitcoin in particular, and it hasn't been around long enough to thoroughly be tested in all economic conditions, monetarily speaking. And then because it's software and it's created by man, no matter who created it, the protocol, public key cryptography originated with the NSA, as well as the SHA-256 originated with NSA. So if the NSA is ultimately the overarching creator of its technologies, that in and of itself could be a problem. And so it will not stay decentralized, because with this ETF product, literally it's going to find its way into the hands of Wall Street, like they tend to manipulate everything. And then the security side of things all boils down to the blocks producing every 10 minutes. And they talk about for the next 100 years. Like, so you mean every 10 minutes, a block needs to be produced in order to create more Bitcoin for the remainder of its existence, meaning that the miners have to all be on in order to keep the hash rate high enough to secure the blockchain. So it's just too many links that are problematic for people to really look at this as something that's going to be around for quite some time, given the fact that, you know, things always change. And I can see through this more so that this is a reason why this technology was invented for this time frame, because so many people are so focused on all the pros and cons, the rainbows and unicorns of, you know, how they can build their life around a protocol. Yeah. And behind the scenes, everything that they've built has been used against us, because it has been a part of the CBDC model. And mind you, the CBDC model of what's coming will not operate on the same level of security. It will be even greater level of security, because they have to make sure that when they're officially rolled out, it has to be quantum resistant. So that's a part of the whole strategy that they're working on now. And if you don't believe me there, let me just share more with you. Because they are testing right now. They are testing the ability to make sure that their financial system is quantum resistant. And if you want to verify that, it's called Project Leap. Project Leap, quantum proofing the financial system. And so they have and are building out an architecture that would allow the CBDCs, when they're rolled out, to be quantum computer resistant. There's no quantum network resistance with a version one of a crypto, which is, you know, the genesis block of Bitcoin. And so wherever Bitcoin goes, the rest of the sector goes. So that's a risk, people. So anyway, that's just me rant, man. Anyway, I saw some thoughts out there. Let's get a little Q&A if you guys want. Thoughts and thoughts, ideas, suggestions, what you keep your eye on. Somebody mentioned, I saw some about Mike, the Mike and Mario show. Yeah. And so I've mentioned it a couple days ago, but the reason we haven't done a Mike and Mario show, just because I mentioned Mario that, you know, on my side here, due to, you know, schedules changing and, you know, as a content creator, I'm always trying to find new ways to tweak and improve and expand to reach more people. And with the Mike and Mario show, even though it works well and Mario's still my guy, we still communicate, we still talk, just the preparation that goes into preparing for the show, to me, is not, it hasn't been as beneficial, but it hasn't reached as many people as I wanted to. Because literally, for me personally, the Rethinking Dollar concept and the channel itself is up against the algos. And algos have already, for the most part, dismissed my channel. So right now it's 87 people checked in. So it doesn't reach anybody. So it's like, other than talking amongst ourselves, covering topics that we all are aware of, everybody who's plugged in now, you guys are awake and aware. You've made small preparations of whatever magnitude you need to for yourself. The whole point of me logging in is to reach new people so that I can wake up the masses and get more people plugged in, not just talking amongst ourselves all the time. And so because of that, I'm like, Mario, let's just dial down and let me just continue to work on the back end on my end and try to figure out a way to either skirt the algorithms and, you know, work with the algorithms, something like that. So that's part of the reason why I've dialed back just from collaborating in general and just sticking with, you know, the morning scripts, just because, you know, apparently the algos allow people who plug in more and then before noon than late night. So, or even midday. So that's part of the reason why. So I'm trying to strategize on my end here, but, you know, but once again, when it comes to YouTube is not my friend. So that's why I'm trying to concentrate more on Rumble, just because there are, you know, I get way more engagement on Rumble than I do YouTube. So that's a little bit why. Pablo says, let me get this out of the way. Pablo, let me get myself out of the way here. Give me a second here. I can't really see the comment. It says CBDCs in 5 years, maybe when cash becomes no mas. CBDCs, in my opinion, will be well less than 5 years. I'm saying 2 years. In 2 years, CBDCs will be universal. Now, the Federal Reserve will be the last one to roll out a CBDC, but the rest of the world will already have one, because there'll be no need to have a CBDC in the U.S. while nations are still subject to and still utilizing, you know, the SWIFT payment protocol, as well as our treasury market still carrying some type of value to nations. And so as a result of our debt imploding, our treasuries and debt instruments will not be of substance for the most part. Then that's when they're going to need to roll out something, because the currency will be completely destroyed by then. And there'll be the need for something to, I guess, fall in place as a part of the rebuilding process after the banks and after everything else happens. So Carlos says, again, the crypto market was invented to speculate and play the insane games if you got in on time. Oh, 100%. So people who got in earlier have done quite well. Now coming out in the home stretch is literally trying to get the last remaining of the, what is it? It's a large, whatever the retirees, I think it's 30 trillion or 40 trillion or something like that. And in the baby boomers asset portfolios into crypto, like to get as much of that as they can into there, which is basically just a, you know, transfer of wealth out of the hands of the older into the younger. And then, you know, eventually they will pull a plug on the crypto space, because you can't have a CBDC and, you know, another alternatives such as, you know, just the public ledger blockchains running side by side, because that'll hinder their ability to control the masses if you got options. So, yeah, somebody says 2 weeks. Yeah, and the reason I say 2 years is just because literally it's all predicated on the banking sector. So literally, based upon all the stuff I talked about earlier, if and when there is an obvious, unavoidable banking contagion, that's people's deposits. That's the currency we use. So literally, if people can't access what they think is theirs inside of the banks, they're going to need a substitute. They're going to need an alternative. And we know their solution will be a rebranded version of our digital currency already that will be just solely consolidated into the hands of a smaller few. So it won't be subject to the entire fractional reserve commercial banking model anymore. It's going to be literally the current balance of that everybody has in banks. So whatever you log on to your bank, whatever it says, whatever dollar amount you have in there, there's nothing there other than just that number. So it's not a problem to take that same number and just roll it on to a new ledger and tokenize it, as we've talked about before, so that they can still benefit from having it on their balance sheet by being able to, you know, lend against it, sell against it, whatever they're going to do with it to make yield for themselves off of it. But then also to have it directly linked to the commercial or the Federal Reserve's ledger of some capacity, to where all that will take place on the back end, and where we won't know nothing about it. It'll just be, when we log in, there'll be different requirements for logging in, meaning that you'll probably have to have some permissions to do that, whether it be that digital ID we talked about, whether it be the medical situation that's underway right now, it's going to be ramped up, and the social side of things, the social credit score. So everything happening in China will be fully operational here in the U.S. by that time. And now that I'm still talking, let me just share with you my last thought here that I didn't get a chance to get to. But I put out an article on the RTD blog where I encourage people, you know, I put these stuff together just so people can get a chance to see things from a different perspective. But this coming two weeks from now, the World Health Organization will be voting on the new or rebranded, rewritten pandemic agreement. And if, you know, thumbing through it, it just takes a lot of the wordings and moves them around a little bit to make it look like it's not very invasive. You're not going to lose your national sovereignty. Okay. But if this passes, which I'm more than leaning on the fact that it will come May 27th, that means that everything will be in place. All the nations that sign up for it will be locked and loaded, so that once they get this, every nation's signature, meaning that they have ushered the WHO into position to control the next pandemic, between June and September, October-ish, the likelihood of them rolling out another health event before our election here is very high. And so once the signatures are signed, sometime this summer, early fall, an event will occur, possibly a health type of event or a war. Then that gets into the whole, you know, ballot harvesting, all stuff like that, heading into the presidential election, if we get to it the way that, you know, we expected it should. But then again, don't hold your breath on anything nowadays. And so that's one scenario. The second scenario is if NATO continues to press on adding Ukraine in a timely manner, i.e. this summer, that's a red line crossed. Russia will respond. And if any type of activity happens in the NATO nations, the U.S. will get involved. So the U.S. will more than likely mobilize troops of whatever we have left, sending them in that region, therefore hollowing out our country's internal military to where there'll be no real security here on the ground. Then you activate all the sleeper cells that are here in our country right now, waiting for that call, whether, you know, from Iran or just from within our own agencies here, and the UN, which are here as well. And so there was a, let me share with you quick. I'm everywhere right now, but I think it all lines up. There was a, let me share this with you real quick here. Do I have it? Yeah. Okay. So this is something that came across my radar. So from an interview, and they're talking about what's happening in UK, but then it parallels exactly to what's happening here. It says, this is from Jim Ferguson, May 11th, said, exclusive breaking, the mass number of illegal immigrants pouring into our respective countries are in fact UN soldiers. It says, quote, these are UN soldiers and they will be deployed by the World Health Organization when they announce the next pandemic lockdown. And then it goes on to say, nope, let me see here. I mean, it says, so this is just his quote here from the UK version, but it just talks about, let me see, details, whatever. Okay. So these are emerging in British forces. Okay, whatever. So it says here, the details that are emerging suggest that the British forces will be sent abroad to fight Russia in the Ukraine, in Ukraine, that will effectively leave no patriotic soldiers within Britain to protect the British population against the illegal migrants, will be issued uniforms and given powers by the globalists to police, control, and order the British people to stay at home, and will have the powers to get physical and arrest anyone who does not comply. Says this explains why Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and parts of Europe are all facing the same plan by the globalists. So that's just one person's opinion, hypothesis, or whatever. He's saying that if NATO go, if we go to war, all military troops within our countries, respectively, will be sent to fight. Therefore, there will be nobody here in the U.S. or Canada or Australia. And then everybody who's been smuggled through the border will get their orders to then mount up, and they will, you know, be walking around with, you know, the blue hats on, the UN vehicles around. So, like, when you hear stuff like that, just stuff to makes you wonder, makes you think. You know, there's definitely a lot at work here, a lot at play here. And once again, you won't hear about these perspectives from anywhere other than mainstream media, other than alternative media. But also another thing is, I'm rambling, but yesterday there was a, as you can see on the screen here, there was a Trump rally in New Jersey. And somebody said, you know, over 100,000 or whatever. I mean, large amount of people. So imagine all this red. And for the life of me, I can't really, I can see. I mean, to me, when I look out here, I see a crowd of desperate people that are hoping that one man can make America great again in the midst of all this chaos going on. And they are putting their hope and trust in him to get this done. Because that, to me, showing up to these rallies where, especially, you're going to these rallies where he says nothing new, like nothing new that's like revealing. He just tells the crowd what they want to hear. And speaking of which, let me share another video with you. And the reason I bring this up here is because, like, it's stuff like this that it's a distraction. Like, I just find it hard to believe that he's still able to draw such a crowd, apart from people who have placed their confidence and trust the fact that if he was to get back in, all of a sudden he's going to reverse everything. And one single person can't change what is happening right now, because it takes a unified nation to do such. Because if he gets in office, if our Congress has been hijacked, literally, like, just look at the things that they've done in efforts to help Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel with all this aid. And so the Speaker of the House and all these people, they're bought and paid for. They're not going to work with him to undo what they've benefited from. So it's like, how can people still fall for the fact that there's a single person that can create systemic change in a fallen world? And it doesn't help. Let me share something else with you. I'm everywhere this morning, but I just want to, you know, just get it all out there real quick. So let me share another. Let me see. Where is it at? I got a couple things. Let me bear with me real quick. These are just things that come about last minute. But I want to play a video for you that to me is like more of a problem that people should people should really be considering this stuff. Cause it's like, if he's willing and wanting to say things to get his fan base riled up, what would he not be willing to do for the people that are above him that allow him to say stuff like this? Like, he's not just out here talking about things that he hasn't been given permission to talk about, because everything he says are all within the scope of what's permissible. Because if he gets out of line saying things that go against what's really going on, like, he'll never say we need to ban the UN Agenda 2030, or he'll never say we need to we need to ban, you know, abolish the Federal Reserve. Like, he'll never say stuff like that. That's too far, because it won't work, because he know he couldn't get away with that. Like, he will get the Make America Great supporters so riled up to where that will be on some, like, they will probably won't be ready to, you know, revolt type of thing. So he'll keep it on the surface with stuff like this. Let me just, so listen to this video right here.
of a Biden tax hike, I'll give you a Trump middle class, upper class, lower class, business class, big tax cut. You're going to have the biggest tax cut.
He going to give you a lower class, middle class, upper class, business class. You're going to have the biggest tax cut. At the same time, we're running a $2 trillion deficit and climbing and everything in between. So literally, who wouldn't vote for that if you will get a tax cut? Knowing that the opponent has already said he'll raise your taxes. So you got tax cuts, tax hikes. Who are you going to vote for? You know what I'm saying? And then last week, he was a crypto fan. Oh, yeah, crypto? Yeah, sure, I'll let it ride. Okay. Anyway, I can go on and on and on, but I'm not. This is political theater, man. This is what's happening. So I'm like, if you're going to give all these tax cuts, why not just abolish the Fed? Why not abolish taxes altogether if you're giving all these cuts? He can't say that. But then again, it's like, that's kind of like what you're hinting at if you're getting all these tax cuts. So this is what it is, man. What else we got here? Pfizer. Pfizer is that Federal International Standard Court or some crap, isn't it? Or no, let me see here. I typed in Pfizer real quick. What we get here is a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978. Is this the same Pfizer, Brett, you talking about? Wiretapping, surveillance state. This is probably the pre-Patriot Act surveillance tool. Anyway, all right, I can go on and on and on. But once again, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer because it all goes back to what I originally started off with, your faith, putting your faith in something that's true, tried, and tested. That's the word of God. And the creator himself, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. He's the only one we should put our trust in, give our allegiance to. Everything else is just smoke and dust and a wind. And while you're doing that, figure out how you can be a blessing to other people. Sharing your faith, helping promote the good news, the gospel of the kingdom of God. And how there's still hope in a dying world. But it won't come from natural means, the way that you know, it's being brought and touted about from, you know, politicians. These people are all on the take in some capacity. So, yeah, just something to keep in mind, good people. All right, well, that's all she wrote. Be blessed, be safe, have a good day, and I will see you guys tomorrow, Lord willing. Peace.